championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channels, the Hornscast channel on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you guys can find a podcast. So Texas just took care of business in Lawrence, kinda, and they have coming up Oklahoma Sooner. It's Hate Week, Red River Shootout 2.0. So we're going to give you a quick breakdown of Kansas because we got to. And then we bring in the Oklahoma Sooners and talk about what the game means, what has changed since October, what are the key factors of the game, and how should Texas attack and defend the Oklahoma Sooners. So, Joe, my man, how was Lawrence, Kansas on Thanksgiving?
There were not a lot of people there. it was dreary. It was kind of cool to watch Texas play basketball really well the night before on Thanksgiving at a bar at a Four Points. But the next day, I mean, the end result, you know, although it took a little bit to get there, including a pretty poor call and an onside kick, Texas got there. And now they are playing one more game this year. They have a, what will this be, a 14-game schedule.
It's the first time that's happened in quite a while since 2009 was the last time Texas got into a conference championship. That was the kick with 1 second left that Colt McCoy won to go to the national championship. We won't talk about what happened there. But they had to get over Kansas on their way. It was a bit of a rough game, honestly. I know there are guys on Twitter who are saying, you know, don't bring out the bleach. Don't bring out the bleach for Kansas. You got to go to Oklahoma. But you but the thing is with Kansas, this game wasn't pretty. So there's going to be some bleach. But we'll get through it fast.
Yeah, the bleach, I guess, as far as a big picture thing, the bleach is why Texas did not move up at all in the playoff rankings, stuck at 14, and there was a lot of movement around it. You had one click, two click. You had, you know, Washington State lose and still stay in front of Texas. You had Penn State beat a cruddy Maryland team.
Better than Texas.
I don't know if they moved or not. West Virginia did drop all the way back to 16. I can't remember exactly where they were. Michigan dropped back to 7. But like the thing in LSU only dropped back to 10. So like in Texas's general vicinity, nobody really moved, including Texas. And I think you saw that game is a big reason why.
Yeah. But let's go ahead and break down really fast what happened in that game and what you should take away from it. Some minor points, in my opinion, are things like Roach belongs on the defensive line. Like, he has come alive since they finally put him back on the defensive line. At this point, it's like, all right, you just got to keep him where he's been killing it. And then McCulloch at B linebacker next to him has also been pretty good. It makes you hopeful for next year.
Yeah, exactly. I think what you're seeing is that Roach is better against offensive linemen in space than he is against in coverage against running backs and receivers. And it was an experiment this year that, you know, kind of with the Wheeler suspension in the first half of the Maryland game was kind of a little bit necessary. One of those things, it's like, well, got to try it because we don't have Wheeler, and it didn't work at all. So then he got hurt. Moving him to the D-line was always the right call. They kind of had him on a pitch count early. He came out and performed well on the defensive line, and he has turned into a third down nose tackle. It's kind of interesting. Like, right before we started recording, I noticed that he saw one of my GIFs that I posted about him, and he basically said, like, oh, I'm versatile, man. Like, I can do anything. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what he's been able to do. Like, he's a third, you know, on conventional downs, he's been able to play on the edge. And on, you know, third down in passing situations, he has been able to kind of wreak havoc from the nose spot. And it's weird because you'll see the nose tackle loop a lot in this defense on their third downs. The loops are some of Todd Orlando's favorite things to do on third down, and he's really good at doing it. I thought Taquan Graham was good at it last year, and Roach has proven to be just a little bit better at it.
Yeah, and it's especially promising that they saw the problems that Chris Nelson was having in the pass rush on third downs. And instead of just forcing him to do something that he's not good at, finally figured out a solution around it and got Malcolm Roach in there in his stead. And he has been a huge upgrade on third down and on passing downs over Chris Nelson. Another thing, the other side, so another general thought I had is Trey Watson has been a godsend. Trey Watson has been huge. I can't imagine the backup situation for Texas without Trey Watson, because he has started to get a habit of breaking a few big runs. Now, him and Keonta Ingram, they both aren't extremely explosive, but they can break like a 20 to 30 yard run here and there, and having the two of them combined do that has been huge for this offense.
The last time that this offense had an experienced back was Deontay Foreman, because even going back to Chris Warren, that was a guy who missed most of a season with injury, I believe. 2015, everybody remembers that big Tech game, that breakout game, but 2016, I'm pretty sure he missed a lot of time with that PCL injury, and that's why you saw a lot of Foreman. So that was, he's provided a level of experience in that running back room that Texas hasn't had since Charlie Strong was here. That's a huge deal. He's reliable. Other than he put the ball on the ground this past week, but was ruled to have been down prior. He is just done everything really well, nothing excellent, but everything really well. And that's, I think, what Texas was expecting when they got him in the grad transfer market. That's what they wanted. They wanted somebody who, could allow for them to split carries with what they consider a special freshman in Keonta Ingram. I don't want to steal your point. It's a good story for others who are thinking about that, and I think that's what you're about to dive into. But, I mean, it's also great for Texas, because if it wasn't for Trey Watson, then you look at last year's running back depth chart in Kyle Porter, who everybody knows his limitations. He's reliable as a passer, or as a pass blocker, but not really. He's not a special back. He's just gets what's there. Daniel Young, same thing. Bigger guy, doesn't have the breakaway speed, and has had ball security problems. And then you got Tenille Carter, who's never been, a big time between the tackles runner, and has had ball security problems throughout his first couple of years, or when he made it on the field in either exhibition or a live game, he had problems putting the ball on the ground.
Grad transfer market last year for Texas was just wonderful. I mean, having Calvin Anderson and Trey Watson come, providing some much-needed depth and seniority on that team, and both have played out very, very well. But the thing about Calvin Anderson and the offensive tackles in general is the lack of size for the offensive tackles. It seems to be a little bit of a problem on passing downs, that and Vahe and Shackelford's communication between each other. Those are some problems I've seen. They're not huge, but they're the things that have been problems over the past few games. You've seen the sacks that have come against Sam Ehlinger come when they attack the connection between Shackelford and Vahe, or when they use sides against Calvin Anderson and Sam Cosmi. Bull rushes against Cosmi, bull rushes against Anderson, and then stunts between Vahe and Shackelford have given this Texas offensive line a lot of headaches. So that's something I would keep an eye on. Another thought of mine right there was, that's something I would keep an eye on. Let's get to some takeaways from this game. Joe, what are you taking away from the Kansas game?
Biggest takeaway is that this team needs to have its first 22 to have its best chance of winning. B.J. Foster fits in there a little bit. His role changes in and out a little bit, so maybe it's a first 23. But, you could tell how, this team struggled without Gary Johnson against Kansas. There were some times, especially late. I mean, first half, obviously, they shut him out, so struggled is kind of a relative term. But this is a time where you want to – it's Kansas. You shouldn't, give up these big chunk plays against this team. You shouldn't have to chase down third down. You shouldn't have to stave off a comeback against this team knowing what's on the line. And I think that not having Gary Johnson in there at times, not having Brandon Jones after his punt return was a little bit of a deflator for that defense. playing with their all 22, which it kind of with their first 22 or 23, which looks like is in the cards for this week against Oklahoma, is what's going to give them their best chance to win. Anything less than that, and you'll see, you know, a team like Kansas keep it close. Now, a lot of that had to do with offense and Sam Ehlinger not playing his best game, which, you know, maybe it's attributable to injury.
RIP interception-less streak.
Maybe it's attributable to other factors, but you need your starting 22 to play like you're starting 22, and that's, you know, that's what's gotten them there this year. Mostly pretty good health, save for Roach's extended absence. But you know, they need their frontline talent to play to the talent level they have.
But what you saw without Gary Johnson was Todd Orlando giving Wheeler some simpler assignments. You saw that last week, but especially this week, single read assignments or single gap containment for Anthony Wheeler really helped him out and his ability to read the offense and take what they give him. I was happy to see Anthony Wheeler really start to come alive in this defense, but a lot of it is given the simpler, dumbed down defense. When you're talking about the starting 22 need to play like the starting 22, especially the defense. There were a lot of missed tackles against Kansas, and that's a team you really can't have missed tackles against, especially given the team that you're be playing in Arlington. There was a lot of missed tackles on that team. There was a lot of it was just one missed tackle led to another one because it kind of hurt another guy's angle. But still, you have to be able to make sure tackles against any team in the Big 12, or else it's going to bite you in the butt like it did for Texas. And then there's two more things I want to break down real fast. Bad special teams. You need to figure out something on the hands team. I know that the hands team, it was not a great call by the ref, but still, Texas has gone a few weeks now of just not being able to handle onside kicks.
I'm gonna give a little bit of a disagreement on this one. I feel like most football players, if they're not expecting a vertical football to come hurtling towards them at about however fast a hurtling football comes, like that guy tried to, you know, you go on to the, you watch videos of Ronaldo curling it inside the crossbar. That's what that looked like going straight for PJ Locke's helmet. And usually you're expecting a bounce. I know a lot of people may have disagreed with this, but I don't really fault PJ Locke in that Tech game for not coming up with that. Like, that's a rocket right at
him. Oh, no, I'm not saying PJ Locke should have got that, but
I know, but you combine that with one instance of not recovering it with Andrew Beck and Cade Brewer. You know, Andrew Beck, he showed hands earlier in the game. He caught that touchdown pass from Sam, the one that he could catch. He's had some drops, but he's also had more catches this year than he has in the rest of his career combined. So he's shown he has ability to get it. That's a tough onside to handle. It should have been handled, but I think a lot of the onside kick angst has to do with some, you know, stuff that, largely, aside from Beck not being able to handle it, is kind of just normal for a team. I mean, I don't think what Colin Johnson did was, I mean, obviously it is a penalty. You got to throw it laterally instead of forward. That goes back to coaching. I think that's a coaching point, not something Johnson thought to do. But I think there's a lot of angst about the hands team where they're really, I don't think there should be as much angst considering, you know, what's happened in the past couple of onside attempts Texas has had to deal with.
My response to that would be, once is chance, twice is a coincidence, and three times it's a pattern. When it becomes a pattern, you have to take care of it. And that means figuring out something with that hands team. I don't know what it is. I can't tell y'all, but something has to change there. And I know it might be bad luck, but again, three times is a pattern. It's happened three times. Figure out something. Put the right guys in there. Figure out how to react to these types of situations. Practice them over and over and over again, because I bet it'll happen against Oklahoma. But the other special teams with the punting, you can't let them get you within the 5-yard line three times. You have to be able to catch that. You can't have your starting safety who had a head injury or a knee injury or whatever, recovering punts. because the other guys cannot do that. So you have to figure out something on your special teams, especially with the kicking, because Dicker kicked it out of bounds twice. I know there's a bunch of wind, but still, you have to figure something out with your special teams. It was atrocious.
The only punt that I'll listen to an argument about, and that I kind of made an argument for DeShawn Jameson, was the first one. The Kansas punter had the win, and he kicked a knuckleball because he knew he had the win. So that ball is probably flying around, and he let it bounce, and he let it, you know, after he let it bounce, he rightfully let it go. It just rolled. The other ones, like you mentioned, Brandon Jones. I know Tom Herman has mentioned that they put him back there on punt safe because I don't know why. Well, you recruited DeShawn Jameson as a defensive back. Can't he do the same thing on a punt safe team after a sub? And obviously you'll be able to get him off the field because the other team's going to have to sub off their punt team. I don't think there's any reason that DeShawn Jameson can't be back there for punt safe unless they don't trust them, which, you know, why is he your punt return anyway? The other occasions, Brandon Jones, the fact that he's back there, if it's punt safe, call a fair catch. Isn't that the safe thing to do? Obviously, the other two occasions where the ball bounced inside the 10, got to get those. So the first one I'll let slide as far as punt team goes. The other ones, Craig Nivar and Tom Herman and Casey Horney, have to work on getting that fixed.
What the takeaway from this is, you can't have these type of special teams chokes against a team like Oklahoma. You can't have that go into the next game. You have to figure out how to get the advantage in those hidden yards on the special teams. The next thing I have is the pass rush was an issue again. That's another takeaway. You need to figure out how to get a pass rush against Oklahoma. You have to figure out a way to get to Kyler Murray, get him well acquainted with the turf. But against Kansas, you had trouble with that against an immobile quarterback. You're using a delayed blitz. You're using contained rushes against an immobile quarterback. Why at this point? I don't understand some of Todd Orlando's philosophies when it comes to blitzing. It seems like the lightning package sacrifices the ability to get pass rush to get guys back in the coverage, and I don't know how worth it that is anymore, because Texas, I know it's an unreliable stat, but they had zero QB hurries against Kansas. I know they had three tackles, but those came after, really, it was more covered sacks than they were anything else. So Texas need to figure out how to get a way into the pocket. They need to take a look at what they did against Iowa State. Stop using delayed blitzes as your main weapon on third down and on passing downs. Use your immediate blitzes. Get guys on the line. It shouldn't matter at this point, because it shouldn't matter if you're showing what you've got, because at this point, you're basically letting the quarterback know when he has 5-6 seconds in the pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Those looping blitzes I talked about, a lot of that has to do with, you know, they'll slant the three defensive linemen, get off five offensive linemen looking one way, and then send Jeff McCulloch. And like I mentioned, sometimes they'll send you know, either they've done it with a DB with Chris Boyd, or they'll send they'll stunt a nose tackle all the way around. But it takes a while to develop. It asks a lot of the coverage, and that's tough, especially against OU. It's really tough against, you know, CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Brown, any other of the receivers that they have on their roster. So you've got to use the blitzes correctly this week. As weird as it sounds, 3rd and 15 can easily be made up by this OU offense and kind of look like, you know, with the space that they create around the field, make it look like 3rd and 6. I think Orlando should keep that in mind, but not let that alter his philosophy too much. And, you know, here's what he's got to do. Use that strategy that kept him to 21 points through three quarters instead of 21 points in the last quarter.
And that kind of brings us to the last thing, which is another fourth quarter lead, 3-touchdown lead, kind of dissolved in front of Texas's eyes. Take away from that, you have to figure out how to end off games. You have to. Whether that is keeping your foot on the throttle on offense, or whether that is keeping your foot on the throttle on defense, there has to be some way that you can figure out how to stop giving up those fourth quarter leads. It has happened 3 times, maybe 4, three times this year. Oklahoma, Texas Tech, and now Kansas. you can't have that against Oklahoma again, because Oklahoma this time won't give Texas the benefit of playing down for almost the entire game except for the last 9 minutes. I'm not expecting that out of Oklahoma this time. So if you have them up, you have to finish them. That's the main takeaway. You have to be able to finish a game, and that is on the coaches. Now let's dive into the main topic here. The thing that everybody is here to listen to, Texas versus Oklahoma. It's hate week, man. Joe, do you have any favorite hate week moments?
Let's see. I like Charles Omenihu's quote yesterday about him saying, oh man, it's probably the best. Charles Omenihu gives a lot of great quotes, but the one, you know, if somebody asked him about, like, hey, what do you think about Kyler not saying he respects Sam, and Sam saying I respect Kyler's, or Kyler not having a comment, and Sam saying I respect Kyler's game, and Charles just gives the quote of the year, goes, I guess old boy don't like losing, but he lost, so it is what it is. So that's obviously entered my top five very quickly. And I think that kind of reflects this game. Like, Texas players, at least in that little media setting, they're amped up. They're looking forward to this. They are. It's kind of like their chance to prove, like, hey, that last game wasn't a fluke. We were kicking your butt. And, you know, if it wasn't for Kyler Murray, who for a lot of these players is already a little bit antagonistic, this game would not have been close. So they're amped up. They want to show it again, and it's exciting. And, you know, Jerry World, it'll be interesting to see what the atmosphere is like. I don't think it'll be all the way full. There's still some affordable standing room and seated tickets, but it'll definitely be fuller than, you know, when it was TCU and OU last year, I have to believe. Especially now that Texas is kind of, you know, rising back in a little bit more to national prominence, playing in conference championship games, being in Dallas, big base for the fan base. I think it'll draw a lot of people there.
And antagonistic is sort of that's a word for it for Kyler Murray after this past week. It's an interesting topic, the topic of Kyler Murray in that after game interaction with Sam Ehlinger, which wasn't quite friendly. I understand the fact that a lot of Oklahoma fans don't care about it because there's hate. There's hate in this rivalry. These two teams don't like each other. There is also sportsmanship that is needed in this game. However, on the other side of the spectrum, you have Tom Herman and Sam Ehlinger and the entire team last year against Mizzou doing the little backpack thing. That's not quite great sportsmanship, but I mean, if somebody comes up to you after a game to say good game, you don't brush them off and tell them not nicely to go away. It definitely was antagonistic. I definitely see how some people are saying, okay, you know, Texas isn't exactly the model of sportsmanship, but still, Kyler Murray's responses and definitely his demeanor are, as you said, Joe, antagonistic. But let's go into what this game means for these two teams. Texas coming off the win in Red River Shootout in the Cotton Bowl. Joe, do you think that this game in any way lessens the impact of that Red River Shootout?
No. I mean, it definitely still means a lot, but it means that all the other games are just as important, too, to get to this point. What this game means, I mean, I think it's evident what this game means for Oklahoma. It's a chance to probably go to the playoff. For Texas, it's to win only its fourth Big 12 championship, and that's even coming off, you know, that's despite being in an era under Mac Brown where 10-win seasons were the norm, and that's coming off of an era where 6-win seasons were surprises.
Great.
So I think that, I mean, this means an absolute ton to both programs. If Texas wins, it's well above what a lot of people may have expected. If Oklahoma loses, it's, you know, that they have championship expectations at this point under Lincoln Riley and with this offense, and it would mean not meeting them. And it would, as we've seen with Ohio State, even one loss can kind of call into a lot of things into question. Now they can right the ship, but there's not a lot of room to right the ship after the last regular season game. A Texas loss means that, you know, they didn't overachieve as much as they should have. They probably were around where they should have been. A lot of people may disagree with Tom Herman about the whole overachieving comment, but they kind of are.
I would agree.
I thought the record was about where they were supposed to be, but the result of being in the Big 12 title, I didn't think that would happen at the beginning of this year. And a win for Oklahoma just means, you know, continued excellence. And at this time, whereas normally it hasn't been the case, you get to do it at the direct expense of your biggest rival. So I don't think there should be really mean. I mean, those are some direct meanings, but I mean the biggest meaning here, and I don't think there's anything to it other than the winner is the champion of the conference, and that's what's on the line.
Yeah, I completely agree. There are a lot of smaller meanings, but the big meaning is you're a champion. You're a champion of this conference once again. Now, going back to the ancillary meanings, which is what this is more about, for Texas, I think it's... I don't think Texas wanted this matchup for a few reasons. The main one being you don't want to give Oklahoma a second chance. And I mean this in perspective of your program because there's a high risk here. There's a higher risk here than there would have been against West Virginia. And that means that if they beat you, the recruiting game, you know, which trophy means more, the Golden Hat or the Big 12 championship, there's all these different questions and all these things that put a lot of doubt if Oklahoma wins. Whereas if this doesn't happen, Texas is just the outright winner this year. That's it. Now, if Texas wins, it doubles everything. You know, with high risk comes a high reward. It's kind of like a double or nothing here. If you win, you have two trophies. You have two wins to hold over for recruiting. You have two wins to hold over your rivals' heads for all eternity. Where if you lose... Now you get the fans arguing, okay, which game means more, which trophy means more, which it's going to be confusing. It's going to be a headache. It's interesting. It's a very interesting dynamic that this game has now taken on, and it's given a lot of different meanings to what the Red River Shootout was.
Right. I kind of disagree. I very much disagree on the fact that Texas didn't want this game. Talking to all the players today, you can tell how excited they are to
Well, I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about like the program and more so
They want it. They want it because, you know, who better to beat for your first Big 12 title in 9 years than your biggest rival who's won most of them since that time? I don't think that there's any sense of, oh, I wish we could have avoided OU or gotten another opponent. I think they wanted OU from the get-go. I mean, as soon as that game was over on Saturday and it looked like a lot of them were watching, I think you could tell that there was a lot of excitement in the fact that they were playing OU. And yeah, I mean, every game has risks. Every Red River Shootout has risks of, you know, maybe, you know, if we lose, a recruit will be looking at this in a different direction than what we want. But when you're playing for Big 12 championships, when you're playing for high stakes, you're playing with high stakes. It's a huge risk, huge reward. I don't think
right.
Texas wants to shy away from that. They want to be at that table with the rest of the programs.
Right, but I'm not talking about the players or the coaches or the people inside the program, what they want, because they're obviously not going to step down against a challenge. What I'm talking about is from more of a perspective, from the fan side of things, what you wanted probably was West Virginia, because there's a huge, like, as we said, there's a huge risk reward to this game. You know, you can either win two trophies and laud that over your rival, but you also have the chance of losing out on having the solo win, the 100% win percentage against your rival on the year. Whereas against West Virginia, it's not against a rival, not against direct recruiting threat. And you have the chance of going from a 0% on the year winning percentage to a 50% win percentage on the year. That's why when I took a poll on Twitter, 80% of fans wanted West Virginia over Oklahoma. Not saying that Oklahoma going up against them is a bad thing. It's just creating, a very interesting twist to the rivalry. Going more towards the implications of this game, where does Texas end up afterwards? If they win, if they lose, it's looking like the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
Like a trip to New Orleans.
It would probably take Georgia beating Alabama for Texas not to make the Sugar Bowl and to instead go to the Alamo Bowl. The number two team in the Big 12, which Texas is, in the regular season, will go to the Sugar Bowl if the number one team and conference champion is selected by a college football playoff to go to a semifinal game. So if Texas wins, they're probably not going to the playoff unless all hell breaks loose. They'll go straight to the Sugar Bowl and probably play Georgia. If Texas wins and Georgia wins, they could play LSU or Florida. If Texas loses and Alabama wins, Texas is still likely playing Georgia as long as Oklahoma still makes the playoff, which if that should happen in that scenario. So it'll take a very unexpected loss by Alabama and a definitely not wanted loss by Texas for Texas fans not to be going to New Orleans. I probably botched that. If Texas loses and Georgia wins, Texas going to the Sugar Bowl looks very unlikely there.
Exactly. How funny, though, would it be if Texas faced LSU in the Sugar Bowl and then they play the next year and then the next year, just like LSU three times in a row? That'd be kind of funny.
Be awesome. That's what happened with A&M as they jumped into the conference.
Really? What? Oh, yeah, you're right. The other way around. Yeah. So that's what the implications and the meanings of this game are. So to kind of summarize it, whoever wins is a champion. Done and done. And then the implications, you're going to a big bowl, either the Alamo Bowl, worst case scenario, or a Sugar Bowl, because Texas had a great season overall, a great regular season, and a few points away from going undefeated, I believe, somewhere around like two touchdowns. The first great season Texas has had in a while leads them to a rematch with their hated foe. And to talk about that, let's bring on JY. He's the X's and O's guy for the Football Brainiacs. He's a big Oklahoma dude. So he's a guy who will really know what's going on with the Oklahoma side of things. JY, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Will. How are you guys tonight?
Doing all right. You know, living it up on a hate week. Enjoying the Kyler Sam Ellinger back and forth, the fans back and forth. It's always fun, and it's a special thing that we get twice this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, normally in the Cotton Bowl you got to split down the middle. Now what I'm wondering about how it's going to be with that dynamic of Longhorns setting with Sooners and vice versa. You know,
they're not used to it. It'll be weird for everybody. Gonna have to make some new friends.
I think it's lucky that Texas and Oklahoma have this 11 a.m. kickoff. If it was a 6 o'clock kickoff and people were drinking before that, I wouldn't be surprised if the jail cells of Arlington filled up faster than they could manage.
No, I think knowing both fan bases, I think that I don't think we have to worry about the time as far as it goes with drinking, that's for sure.
Exactly.
But, Jay White, let's go ahead and dive right into Oklahoma, because most Texas fans know what's been going on with Texas, at least if they've been listening to the show. But not a lot of people have been keeping up with Oklahoma besides, you know, rooting for the other team. What has changed for Oklahoma since the Red River Shootout? What has changed since Mike Stoops was let go and Ruffin McNeil took over? Who are the Oklahoma Sooners now?
Well, from a defensive standpoint, I think the kids are buying into what Ruffin McNeil's trying to do. You hear it week in and week out that the guys and the coaches echo the same thing, where they talk about how they're not that far away. Looking at a couple of the plays that popped for big yardage against West Virginia this last weekend, you know, they play a little bit better technique in some key spots. You know, you could probably eliminate two or three big plays that yielded touchdowns. And while that's not anything that, you know, is going to catch any sympathy in college football world, I think that I think the Sooners are definitely talented. I think they're playing harder for Ruffin McNeil than they were for Mike Stoops. I mean, I don't know how it's possible that you would show up in a Red River Shootout and be uninspired defensively, but it just seems that that's how the Sooners played when, you know, in round one back in October. Had it not been for some late game heroics from Kyler Murray, you know, we're probably talking about Oklahoma in the same light that, people are talking about Ohio State losing by 30 to Purdue, although Texas is a way better team than Purdue. You know, and the thing that people don't realize too is that Texas is, I think, what, 9 points away from being undefeated this year too. So I don't think they get the credit that they deserve. But back to Oklahoma, they just, when they want to, I think that they can play really, really hard. Schematically, I think that they're flawed. I think they ask some people to do some things. It puts them in positions that they can't succeed, and I don't think the teaching is there on a somewhat granular level like it needs to be. You look at the offensive line with Bill Beedenbow and how well schooled those guys are. It's baffling to me that you see the level of detail that the backs and the receivers and the offensive line execute with, and then in the same offices you have defensive coaches that don't teach at that level. But, you know, that's probably one of the reasons that Mike Stoops is no longer there. But I think that they played hard on Saturday against West Virginia, but I'm just I don't have a lot of faith in their ability to play discipline for four quarters defensively. So if you get into a situation that you have turnovers like you did last game against Texas, I think Texas comes out on top.
So just looking at some of the games before Texas for Oklahoma, for the games after Texas for Oklahoma, the best offenses in the conference were on the back end of Oklahoma's schedule with a Ruffin McNeil led defense. You know, obviously those offenses are really, really strong. I mean, they put up a lot of points on Texas too, who's had their struggles against those defenses. What about Ruffin McNeil? How did he attack, you know, those passing offenses differently than Mike Stoops would have? Because if I remember, I believe I read that Mike Stoops was real big into man blitzes, and that Ruffin McNeil has kind of moved into a little bit more zone play at least.
Well, Ruffin McNeil has definitely brought more heat in key situations than what Mike Stoops has. You also see the defensive backs playing up tighter than what they had been playing under Stoops. I mean, I affectionately called it the 98-yard cushion, where, you know, it would be fourth and two, and you've got a 9-yard cushion. It's just ridiculous how some of the plays were lined up against.
Texas fans have some of those same questions.
Yeah, it's baffling to me. You look at across college football, the thing that stands out to me the most is why wouldn't you bring pressure and play tight coverage in these against these offenses that are predicated on rhythm? Especially in the Big 12, you got teams like Texas Tech that are going to stand up. They're not going to take a 5-step drop. They're going to throw it within 2 or 3 seconds. And the only way that you can get that quarterback to hold the ball long enough to allow that rush to get any heat on him is to close that window to make it tighter for him to throw against. Oklahoma still, I think, does a little bit too much cushion, but I have to say that the corners, I played their best game in Morgantown that they played all year. When you talk about Trey Norwood, Parnell Motley, and Trey Brown as a group. Now, in the slot, you saw Brendan Radley-Hiles, everybody calls him Buki, that came in as a 5-star recruit. He struggled quite a bit in that game against West Virginia, and he actually gave up his spot to DeLaron Turner Yale late in the game. And while Yale gave up one big play after that, he was playing really well to close that game out. It'll be interesting for me to see who gets the start this week. And the thing that you saw early in the year, I think the defense was watching probably a little bit more film than it seems like they are now. And this is purely speculation on my part, but it just seemed like they were better prepared for Florida Atlantic, UCLA, and some teams like that. But they had all summer to prepare for them.
So I guess I had a question about Buki. Is he playing out of position right now? Because when I watched him at, you know, Army Bowl practices, I thought this guy would be a great nickel, a guy who would come down and be able to effectively fill in the box at, you know, as a defensive back while also being reputable enough in coverage to, you know, work on some receivers. Is he playing out of position right now? And then also, you mentioned DeLaron Turner Yale, who, for, you know, as someone who keeps an eye on recruiting, that's a pretty recent name. Why is he seeing the field so early? Are there some injuries in that back seven for or back five for Oklahoma right now?
Yeah, for your first question, Buki is playing out of position. He's a pure cover corner. He's a guy that likes to get up in people's faces, even though he's a smaller guy. I think he's 5'8 or 5'9. But he'll get up in people's faces and compete, you know, like crazy. He's got great instincts. Why they've had him playing at safety all year is a little head-scratching for me. With Turner, I think he gives them a better tackling presence. You saw that Robert Barnes has played really well in that secondary as that free safety. he's stepped up and kind of taken that over and solidified that, where you had Khalil Houghton early in the year that was really struggling. And Robert Barnes didn't take that over probably until about 2 weeks ago. And then you got Turner Yell that came in. The first time he really saw the field, I think, was last week. And he really played well. He gave up one post route that I think he got caught with his eyes in the backfield, and he didn't go back with the receiver after it, you know, let him cross his face and get deep on him. But after that, it, you know, he broke up the same route. They came back to the well one more time. So, but you do have Houghton is out. You do have Parker is out. So, you know, Turner Yell seems to be a little bit more talented than those guys, even though he might not be as highly rated, and he'll come downhill and he'll hit you too.
So a few questions just going back to the defense, because that seems to be where most of the questions are for Oklahoma. Are there still issues of players out of position, like Mark Jackson on a running back on a wheel route, or missed tackles in the secondary? Are there still those type of issues on this defense, or have those been cleaned up by Ruffin McNeil?
I think the tackling is much better. Sooners tackled very well last week. They played uninspired against Kansas and gave up 40 points, which is very, very disheartening, a little bit embarrassing too. But they're tackling much better. I think you have several players playing out of position. They've got Caleb Kelly that's playing in that Sam. I think he's probably your most talented pass rusher. But just like Okoronkwo last year, they asked him to drop back in coverage way too much. They should just scrap that piece from their playbook, in my opinion. And the other thing of it, you've got a jumbo defensive end in a four-man front in Amani Bledsoe. You got 6'5", 280, and they got him inside playing at a three technique. They've got three techniques growing on trees up there, and they stick him down inside, whereas if they would put him on the strong side, you've got a guy that's 6'5", 280, that's going to line up against a tight end, or on the outside eye of the tackle, in between the tackle and the guard, that, you know, why would you do that? There's some things like that that make me wonder a little bit. You've got the defensive backs that, you know, like we talked about with Buki, and, you know, again with Kelly and Mark Jackson. I haven't seen a lot of him. I don't know if he's hurt or not, but his pass rush hasn't been there. But I think he was thinking too much. And kids like that, I think you just need to turn them loose and say, hey, see ball, get ball. Just, you know, there's a quarterback, go get him and just let him go. Because kid's a great pass rusher. Same can be said for Caleb Kelly and Curtis Bolton. But I don't think they let them do that enough. They try to overcomplicate things a little bit, I think.
On the offensive side of the ball, has anything changed? How has the progression of this offense been since Texas? Has it been what they were, what Texas faced? Have there been any wrinkles inserted into this offense? And do you know if Trey Sermon will be on the field? And if not, what's up with Kennedy Brooks?
Well, Kennedy Brooks, he's only really played, I think, in like 8 games. And most of them have come after Texas. He has been a revelation at running back. I think the Sooners need a little bit quicker back to really make that offense go. And Trey Sermon's very good, but I think at times he can be just a little bit too patient. Whereas Kennedy Brooks really reminds me of a guy like a Tiki Barber that doesn't even look like he's running fast at all. And he just keeps passing people. That guy, I think, is the biggest storyline in the second half of the year. And it's strange because last year it was Rodney Anderson that he came on late. This year, you know, it's Kennedy Brooks. The other piece to the puzzle, I think, that's really stepped up is a guy named Carson Meyer. He's kind of a H-back, fullback guy. But it seems like more and more Kyler Murray is going to him, especially in short yardage and play action situations like they used to do with the fullbacks that they've had in years past with Trey Millard and the Flowers kid. They're doing the same thing with Carson Meyer now. He might not be as fast, but the guy's huge. He's 6'5". I think he goes 265, and he's got great hands and runs pretty well. Those two guys, I think, is the biggest thing. And the other piece of it, too, I think that Marquise Brown has finally gotten healthy. He hadn't been healthy all year. He looked probably the fastest that I've seen him look all year long. And the offensive line has really come together in the last few weeks, and they're just mashing people right now. I think they're going to have a little bit more trouble against Texas because Texas likes to put more people up around the line of scrimmage and Todd Orlando is going to have people be aggressive and force the issue a little bit more than. And I think that's the Achilles heel of this Oklahoma offense, is that you have to force the issue with that. You can't sit back and let them dictate tempo.
Yeah, I'm with you on forcing the issue, and that kind of leads into this next question. I counted, let's see, five, six, seven two-possession games that Oklahoma's played in this year, and I think in every one except for Bedlam, they've had a turnover. Is that kind of the only thing that has really limited this offense at points this year? And the thing, even against Texas, you know, three total turnovers, including, an interception and a fumble from Kyler Murray. Is that the thing that Oklahoma, basically at this point in the year, the only people that are beating them is themselves with turnovers?
I think that's a very good way to put it. You look at Texas, you know, they, with the fumble and the interception that you talked about, I think they gave up the ball to Texas on Texas plus 25 right around that area and gave them less than 30 yards both times to go score. And then you look at Saturday night, where they had a couple of chances to break serve against a very good West Virginia offense when they would get stops. You know, there's, I think, two or three touchdowns they left on the field because there was no signs whatsoever of West Virginia slowing them down. And they still ended up with 59 points, albeit two scores were from the defense. They could have easily put 70 up on West Virginia. And besides the turnovers, I think that the thing that stands out to me is that at times they haven't been as clean at the line of scrimmage as you see in years past. And the offensive line seems to be a little bit more hot-headed than they have. You know, Cody Ford seems to get an unsportsmanlike penalty, or Drew Samia gets a personal foul here and there. Those guys play nasty, but they play on the borderline. And I think that if I'm the defensive line coach at Texas this week, I'm talking about that. I'm talking about trying to get them to do or say something that's going to get them in trouble, because I know that the league officials are going to be probably really looking out for that, considering how heated of a rivalry this is this week, and then the Big 12 title game and possibly a playoff berth for Oklahoma on the line. These guys on both sides of the field are going to be ready to go. So, but back to your question, I think that the biggest stopper of the Sooners offense this year has been themselves. And fortunately for them, they've been able to do it in key situations when they needed to and played clean enough to win games. And if they can put it together Saturday and moving forward, I think it'll be tough for any defense in college football to hang with them.
So let's go ahead and get to our factors of this game. Jay Wild, we'll start off with you. What is your main factors, one of your key factors of this game that's going to determine it?
I think whether or not they bring heat against Ellinger. I think that they're going to have to really try to heat him up. They're going to need to put more people around the line of scrimmage. I think they ran a three-man front against Texas all game, and it seemed like to me Texas was running the same offense that Army did. And so I think that's going to be a big deal in looking how they're going to attack that Texas offense. And the other thing, not to sound cliche, but it's just turnovers and penalties. Who makes the least amount of mistakes?
I'm looking through Oklahoma's stat log. I mean, Kansas is a big outlier with the rushing game at 9.7 yards per attempt, but even over a triple option team like Army, Texas has the second most average yards per rush and the second most total yards on the ground. That's the key. Texas, their style of play is to have spread tendencies, but be a little bit more on the ball control side of things with a strong running game with tight end play, blocking on the line of scrimmage. And, you know, that's like, again, similar to Army. The point is to limit possessions for the other team. If Texas can go on extended drives with Trey Watson, who's played really well as of late, with Keonta Ingram, who's shown promise his freshman year, but is showing the wear and tear freshmen usually have, that'll be the way that Texas can keep Murray off the field. I think the first quarter of the first game kind of was a good sign of that. Oklahoma kind of marches down the field, puts Devontae Davis in a little bit of a constraint, and, you know, he decides to take one step towards Kyler Murray, and it's a touchdown pass. Next drive, you know, there's some big passes to Lil Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson, but a lot of it was running, and, you know, and getting a good four-minute drive in there. So I think, you know, if they can replicate 38 carries for 177 yards, it's going to be a good day for Texas. But, you know, that's kind of holds true against every opponent.
One of my keys to this game, it's not so much what's on the field, but what's in the heads of the players. This game is emotional. That is why you can throw the book out on the game. And I know that's a cliche saying, but what this game has proven over the past few years, actually, I think there was a study on this, that this game is one of the most unpredictable games between two teams in college football. Doesn't matter what team is ranked, what their S&P is. Nobody knows really what can go into this game. Usually who the winner is, the people who have the emotional edge. And in my eyes, that has to be Oklahoma wanting revenge here. But Texas being the underdog, they do also have that emotional factor where, hey, we already beat these guys and we're still the underdog. Let's go and show them. So there, each team needs to have some emotional edge in this game to make them want to go out there and play harder. And I think that is probably the biggest key to this game. The second one is whether or not, I agree with you, whether or not Texas can get to Kyler Murray. If Texas can get into his head, can get into his backfield, then I think Texas has a chance here, because the more you make Kyler Murray make mistakes, the better your chances are at winning the game. Those are my two keys to this game. But now that we know what the key to the game are, let's go ahead and get into the X's and O's here on how you attack or how you defend and how you get these keys to go down. So, JY, you were talking about making sure you can get a pressure on the quarterback for Texas. How have teams done that against Oklahoma? And how would you, if you're a defensive coordinator, how would you line that up for Texas?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to outnumber that offensive line. What you see them run out, they run out of a lot of 10 personnel. A lot of times they'll go open set with a running back. So at most you've got five or six blockers in most situations. So for me, I think you've got to bring more people than they can block. And you've got to bring some guys that can get to Kyler Murray quickly off the edge. Because if you bring as many blockers or if you go in a three-man front, they're going to eat that alive. Because it's going to give Murray time to sit back there, run around, make plays with his legs, or they're going to just line up and run over you because they've got a numbers advantage. I think they have to force the issue with numbers. And then they have to play tight on the outside because, as great as Hollywood Brown is, the guy is going to struggle against bump and run because he's not as big as a minute. And if you take away those two outside receivers and take away those quick throws and the bubble screens and the tunnel screens and the things like that and force them to run the football against more people than they can block or force them to throw the football and beat tight man coverage, that's when you get them off schedule. And I don't think you win all of those all the time, and you might give up some big plays, but I think you're going to make enough plays to frustrate them and get them off schedule and give that offense that you have time to put a drive or two together. Because I think Oklahoma is going to come out and be as emotionally prepared as they have been all year. I haven't seen them play one game where they've come out with their hair on fire this year. And that's the biggest thing to me that stands out about it. So I think if they come out and have some early success, I think they're going to just turn it into a snowball. But if they come out and Texas hits them in the mouth and it's going to be a dogfight all day, I don't think either team backs down. But I think that Texas is the more physical team. Oklahoma's a little bit faster. But, then it comes down to who's going to make the most mistakes. And I think that I have a little bit more faith in Sam Ellinger not to turn the ball over than I do Kyler Murray. Kyler's great, has big plays, having one of the greatest seasons in college football history. But, if you force him to, and you hit him and do those things, Sam, you can knock the hell out of that guy all day long, and he's still going to stand in there and throw it, and Kyler will too. But he's just a little bit stronger, and he doesn't give up the ball like Kyler does.
Yeah, I think one of the main ways you get to Kyler Murray in this offense, you didn't see this against Oklahoma, but when Texas has had success rushing the quarterback, it has been with immediate blitzes. That means getting guys on the line immediately, whether that is timing the snap or just getting them in position. That is when Texas has most success. When they don't have success is when they do the delayed blitzes. The delayed blitzes, they're good in certain situations, but not as your main course meal. So Texas needs to figure out a way to incorporate those immediate blitzes into their game plan, whether that's going mixing in a lot more nickel into the game plan than they had last game, where they were almost 100% lightning. They need to do that. And another thing for this offense is make them play in a box. Oklahoma is really, really good when they have the wide open field, but they've actually struggled a little bit, or at least, you know, in Oklahoma offensive sense, when they have a shorter yardage to gain. Third down and short success rate is 66.7%. That's 94th in the nation. Goal line success rate, 57.1%, 86. When they're inside the 11 to 20 yard line, 41.2% success rate, 52nd in the nation. That's when they have issues, is when they have to work in a box. So Texas has to figure out a way to get them to work in a box. That means making sure nothing is over the top and that they pressure up front. So they come from back to front in their defensive game plan. They did a great job of doing that last game when they boxed in Kyler Murray a lot of the time until the last 9 minutes. This game, they have to find some way to repeat that. And I think that is with more nickel and having the same type of secondary conservativeness that you had, get them within the third 30-yard line, make them start to play inside of a box, and then beat them on third down. Find some way to stop them on third down. Now, the offense side of the ball, you said you have to get it to Sam Ehlinger, and I completely agree, man. You got to make sure Sam Ehlinger is running. That is where this Oklahoma defense has just had troubles forever. That is what opened up the offense for Texas in the last game, was when they gave Sam Ehlinger the ball and he was able to run, it made the Sooner defense just absolutely have no idea what was going on and opened up the air. It opened up other lanes. It really killed Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'll say that, you know, it seems like Oklahoma's got a strong rushing attack. A lot of it's predicated on that counter game. And a lot of that, I guess, defending it, you know, every day in practice is like being in the right spot. When it comes to stopping Texas's running game, a lot of it has to do with beating the guy in front of you in the spot that you're in. We saw a lot of Texas winning that in the first game. And I think that kind of translates over to the defensive line as well. You see guys like Chris Nelson, Charles Omenihu, Brecken Hager, who are used to taking on guys right in front of them, but also have a good sense of where to be because Texas on offense, it runs its own version of that GT counter that, you know, Oklahoma has perfected. And they also know from that three-man front where to be, where to go, how to break it up. Kansas ran counter several times throughout the game, in the Texas game, and you saw both the defensive line and the nickelbacks break it up. If they can kind of take away the bread and butter, especially for, you know, Kyler Murray, I think that'll be a big deal, especially in the running game, because Kennedy Brooks, I remember watching his film in high school, once he gets free, he's free. He's not getting stopped till he slows down when he hits the end zone. And I think that, like you mentioned, keeping everybody in a box and winning in a box, That's how Texas win this game, and that's how, you know, it seems like they won the game last time, and that's how they want to win almost every game.
Again, going back to one point I missed on the offensive side of the ball before I threw it back over to you, Joe, attacking the secondary with Texas. Texas has a huge size advantage against Oklahoma in their secondary. You have Colin Johnson back on the field. You have Little Jordan out there. Even Devin Duvernay is not that small of a dude. And Texas took advantage of this last game, and that was why Texas was so effective against their defense. They have to do it again. JY, you were talking about how Oklahoma gives these teams huge cushions. Take advantage of it. Same thing with the slant routes. Find a way to get them to bite up and then take a shot over top. Texas, like you said, Joe, they need to have those extended drives, but don't be afraid to take the shots down the field like they did in the game before, where they had a lot of big plays down the field to their big wide receivers. Just chuck it up. Have faith that your guy is going to outjump the other guy, because he likely will. So, JY, I'm going to throw it last over to you. What are your offensive keys to Texas for how they should attack and defend Oklahoma in the X's and O's side of things?
Well, I think somebody touched on it. It may have been Joe, but I think whoever runs the ball most effectively is going to win this football game. It seems like that is the telling stat year in, year out down in the Cotton Bowl. It's going to be a little strange with them playing in Arlington, but I'll take OU Texas anytime I can get it. I think whoever's going to be the most physical and who's the most emotionally ready to play is going to win this game. And I think that who cares enough to prepare the best is going to be big, because against Kansas, for whatever reason, against Texas, Oklahoma came out flat. You know, I don't see that happening this week, but are they going to be motivated enough to do the extra homework and work on the little things that they've struggled with all year long? Because they're still struggling with basic fundamental things defensively that you shouldn't be struggling with 12, 13 games in. You know, there's times that their linebackers look lost in pass coverage. And if I'm Texas, I'm throwing it to Humphrey 6 yards down the field, and I'm making those smaller defensive backs tackle that guy. He's a man child. So if I'm them, I want him trying to run over those guys, and, you know, that'll demoralize them. You know, it's just who's going to be the most physical at every position across the board. Who's going to be the most physical? I have no doubt in my mind Texas is going to come out ready to play too. And they're going to want to say that, you know, this last time wasn't a fluke. We're here to stay. We're a big player in Big 12 again. You know, they're playing for a ring. This is a big-time game for both programs. Those guys I know want to turn the corner, get Texas back to where they were when Mack Brown had them playing for championships. So you said it, Will. I think you said it best. It's a game of emotion. Who comes ready to play?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I was at that game, and, you know, when Texas had that 21-point lead, I was kind of thinking silently to myself, like, is this a game we're going to see backups in for Texas? Because it looked that way. It looked like Oklahoma was kind of letting things happen, not making any, you know, not making things difficult for Texas. But when you have an elite player like Kyler Murray, things can change in an instant, and he can inspire belief, and that's why he's as good as he is. Yeah, it's going to come down to who, you know, I know it kind of seems like a football cliche, but in this case, it's very true. Who is able to, you know, set the tone of the game early? Because if you're dictated the tone, you have to respond. If you dictate the tone, they have to respond to you. And I think, you know, both teams they obviously have different tones. So we'll see how it goes in the early stages of the game.
And last question for you, JY. How confident is Oklahoma in this game?
I don't think they're cocky. I think that they know that there's no way to sugarcoat it. You guys kicked Oklahoma's ass last time we played. I think they know that. I think they're tired of everybody talking about how Oklahoma can't play defense, even though it's a reputation that's been earned. Stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason, as the old saying goes, especially when it comes to football stuff. It's a deal, I think, where they have been humbled, and I think that had Oklahoma beat them the first time around, I think you guys would just absolutely mop the floor with them this time. But I think it's going to be a little bit different, because I think they're going to come in a little bit scared. And fear is a great motivator in football. When you're afraid that you're going to get embarrassed, you know, get embarrassed bad, if you don't play your absolute best, I think that's a great motivator, and especially for those guys up in Norman, because Texas physically embarrassed that defense last time. And I'm pretty sure they're probably hearing about it all week long too. So I don't think they're cocky. I don't think they're arrogant at all. I think they're very acutely aware that if they don't bring their absolute best game, they're going to get their ass beat. And I think that offensive line is going to be ready to go too, because they understand that if they keep Kyler and those backs and receivers going, that it'll be tough for Texas to stop them too. So I think they'll be ready to go, but I don't think they're going to be cocky at all.
That's what I was expecting. But JY, thank you so much, man, for coming on. It's awesome to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you guys too. Anytime. Really appreciate it. Great to meet you, Joe.
Take care. Thank you.
And JY, where can we find you?
Well, I'm on both Texas and Oklahoma sites, footballbrainiacs.com. My Twitter handle is at JY Brainiac. Do a lot with, you know, different kids watching films. I'm more of a film rat than anything. I don't do a lot of recruiting stuff or anything, but I do like to, you know, explain the X's and O's and look for the little things that take care of the big things.
JY is a awesome follow. Everybody who is a Texas fan should follow him. I know he's an Oklahoma guy, but he does break down Texas film. He does a great job of it too. again, at JY Brainiac on Twitter. Wonderful dude. JY, thank you for coming on, man.
Hey, thank you guys too. Have a great night.
And on that note, y'all, we're going to end off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baser. You guys can also find me on the Football Brainiacs, just the Texas side. Sometimes I go on the Oklahoma side if I have a nugget there. But you guys can find me there or on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or my man Joe Cook. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Inside Texas, or you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find us on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Play, anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. Anyways, thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.